gentlemen, and welcome to a new episode of Welcome to Slam Town.
Hello.
The sensational Sam Housen, and I'm joined by my best friend and co-host, Mr. Intimidating Tim.
What's going on?
And you guys may be noticing that Josh is not here this episode. He's taking a little break, but he'll be back with us for the next recording. So we look forward to having you back on the show, Josh.
Hell freaking yeah.
Hell yeah, brother. What's up, brother? So, Tim, did you see what I called this episode?
You called it, we watched Rebellion together.
I did, because I could not think of one of my classic rhyming titles. I was going to go Rebellion, or is it Rasmellion, because it stunk, but I didn't think that was good. So I just called it, we watched Rebellion together, because for the people listening to the episode, Tim was home, and he was able to come to my place and watch the show.
Yeah.
My wonderful girlfriend, Brittany, my best friend, Sam, and my cousin, Tanner. And we had a really good time.
Yeah, dude, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, there were sodas, snacks, sweet treats. It was great.
And there was wrestling.
Yeah, which is what this podcast is about.
Yes.
So, as always, we start our episodes with our week in wrestling. Now, I've got a certified doozy of things I did. And Tim's got some opinions he wants to share. But we're going to start off with the results. Not all the results, but a couple big things that happened at the first ever AEW Dynasty pay-per-view, which is held on Sunday, the 21st. So coming out of the Zero Hour, which is like the free show you can watch on YouTube, like they talk about the matches. There's a couple things that don't feel like they fit the main card, but it's like to get the crowd hyped up. So I guess the main event, so to speak, of Zero Hour was a title-for-title match. The AEW Trios Champions, the Acclaimed, Anthony Bowens, Platinum Max Caster, and Daddy Ass Billy Gunn, versus the Ring of Honor six-man tag team champions, the Bullet Club Gold, Switchblade Jay White, and then Austin and Colton Gunn. Bullet Club Gold ended up winning the match, so they're the new unified six-man champions, because at this pay-per-view, they unified AEW's Trio belt and the Ring of Honor World six-man tag team belts. So Bullet Club Gold now has that, which I think is a pretty big win.
Yeah, very, seems like there's been a lot of unification stuff going on.
Yeah, I think it's a little strange to have them unified, especially since at the last pay-per-view for Ring of Honor, the Bullet Club Gold fought Lance Archer and Minoru Suzuki and successfully retained the six-man tag belts, and they were new belts. It was like a new design and everything.
Right.
So I don't know if they're going to make it just one title or they'll carry both like WWE did with the Raw and SmackDown belts for the longest time. But who knows? The new six-man titles look really cool. So hopefully we'll see him stick around. But
yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, and then on the main card, we had three titles change hands at this pay-per-view. We'll start with one that isn't like officially recognized as a title, but they announced it like it was a official thing. Chris Jericho defeated Hook to win the FTW championship.
Very interesting decision.
Not happy about this at all. During the match, people were like chanting, please retire, like Jericho, and like they were not having it.
Yeah.
This is like, I think if I'm remembering correctly, this might actually only be Hook's like second ever solo loss.
Oh wow.
I think the only other time he lost a solo match was against Jungle Boy when Jungle Boy won the FTW title. And then Hook won it back, and now he lost it to Jericho at this pay-per-view. Jericho is very much giving Hollywood Hulk Hogan, where he, like, it feels like he's got to win everything, and they want him to work with younger talent, but he's, like, not putting over the younger talent.
Right. All right.
Which is, it's so stupid, but like, oh my God. So I think that makes Jericho maybe the ninth person to ever hold this belt that's not really a belt. Taz held it. He created the belt. That's Hook's father. And then Rob Van Dam, Sabu, Brian Cage, Hook, Jungle Boy, and Christian. Okay, Jericho's the seventh, if I'm not missing anyone. Oh, Ricky Starks. That's eight. I think this is dumb. I don't get it. A lot of people seem to think Hook is now NXT bound, but he's going to explore free agency when his contract's up. So that's kind of cool. After that, we move on to two exciting things. Willow Nightingale defeated Julia Hart to win the TBS championship, which I'm glad Willow won. I really like her, but I think she's only a transitional champion because her next challenger, I almost guarantee it, is Mercedes Moné, the former Sasha Banks. It's kind of like a revenge storyline because when Mercedes initially got injured, it was in the finals of the New Japan Strong Women's Championship Tournament, a tournament she was originally supposed to win, but she got injured in her match against Willow Nightingale, which is why Willow was the first ever New Japan Strong Women's Champion.
Oh.
They called an audible and put the belt on Willow. So now it feels like they're going to do this like revenge tour thing.
Right.
And Mercedes is going to take the belt off of Willow whenever she has her makes her debut or something, like in a match. She's been on every week. She just hasn't wrestled yet. I think she might debut in ring at Double or Nothing, which I think is in May, but I'm not sure about that. So congratulations to Willow winning this title.
Yeah.
It'll be cool to see. I just think it's kind of crummy that she's a transitional champ, but yeah, still exciting to see a new champion.
Yeah. Which
brings us to arguably the most exciting new champion to come out of this pay-per-view. Whose house?
Swerve's
house. Swerve Strickland defeated Samoa Joe to become the first ever African-American AEW World Champion.
Mm-hmm.
And the... I'm going to get this number wrong. He's either the eighth or ninth person to hold the AEW Championship since its inception in 2019.
Wow. Big ups to our boy.
Jericho, Moxley, Kenny, Hangman, CM Punk, MJF, Samoa Joe, and Swerve. Okay, yeah, eight people held the AEW World title.
Nice. Dude, that's impressive. Just rattling that off the dome.
I think that was in order. Too.
Bonus points.
Boom. Yeah, Swerve defeated Joe, won the title. So this week's Dynamite, which as of time of recording is tomorrow, we'll get to see Swerve arrive at the show as champion.
Rocking also heard he's the belt.
Yeah, he's getting like a collaboration with Nike for a pair of sneakers.
Yo. He announced that
at the press conference holding the title for the first time. And I think he wore the shoes in the match and like gave the pair to Tony Khan to be like the first person to get these sneakers.
These stinky used like, sneakers.
Yeah. Like Tony gave me the belt. I'm giving Tony the sneakers. That kind of thing. And then it's not as big as Swerve winning the title, but the Young Bucks won the vacant AEW Tag Team Championships. They were vacated when Sting and Darby defeated the Bucks at Revolution, and that was Sting's last match. So the finals to determine new champions was the Young Bucks versus FTR in a ladder match. And during this match, it appeared that a fan was entering the ring, and he was like, he tipped over the ladder that FTR was climbing, and security kind of put him in the corner of the ring and was like, hold him in place. And he was wearing a Sting mask and a hoodie. Pulls his mask off, takes his hood down, and it is the scapegoat, Jack Perry. Scapegoat Jack Perry, back from New Japan, tipped the ladder with FTR to help the Young Bucks win the tag belts. So now the Elite, the Young Bucks and Okada, have the Continental Championship and the tag belts. But as Jack Perry was being escorted through the crowd to leave, he threw up the Elite symbol, which the Young Bucks threw up back to him. So is Jack Perry the fourth member of the Elite? I guess we'll find out.
We'll have to find out. Follow along for more.
Yeah, this match card was pretty good. It also featured Will Ospreay versus Brian Danielson. Ospreay won. That match was incredible. Yeah, I think that was pretty much it for Dynasty.
Hell yeah, dude.
That I wanted to talk about. And another thing, recently on 420, the same day as Rebellion, the main topic of this episode, Major League Wrestling put up for free on YouTube War Chamber 2, the second, like, pay-per-view, quote-unquote, they recorded at the War Chamber show. So this included a second War Chamber match and a couple other big matches. The WTF duo of Filthy Tom Lawler and Davey Boy Smith Jr. successfully retained their tag belts against Mr. Thomas and Alex Kane of the Boumaier Fight Club after AJ Francis, who, you know, it's a pre-tape because he was at the opening match of Rebellion, distracted them from the commentary table. So, WTF retains the belts. Fast forward to the end of the show. WTF gets attacked backstage by the Contra unit. They get taken out. They're injured. MLW decides to make the tag titles vacant because Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Filthy Tom cannot compete due to injuries sustained by the Contra unit. So they announced that a match to crown new champions will take place at Azteca Lucha, or Azteca Underground, the show on May the 11th, which is like their kind of homage to Lucha Underground that used to be on the El Rey Network, created by Robert Rodriguez of Spy Kids fame.
Spy Kids.
So that match will be the Second Gear Crew, who the WTF defeated to initially win these titles, versus Cozy Max, which is current MLW World Champion Kojima and his tag team partner, whose name I still don't know, for the vacant belts. So if Cozy Max wins, we'll have a double champion in MLW. I think that about covers it for my week in wrestling. I'm going to pass the floor to you, Tim.
Thank you. I will accept the floor. I will catch it flawlessly.
Boom. It's yours.
I will be talking about the brand new tag team titles that WWE has unveiled to replace the previous Raw and SmackDown themed ones. So I think they revealed these maybe a few weeks ago, but I don't think we fully covered both of them, at least on the show. So I'll just rattle off some opinions on them. So we'll start with the WWE World Tag Team Championship, which is replacing the existing Raw one. So it's currently held by the Awesome Truth, Miz and R-Truth. And this one, probably my you know, second favorite out of the two. It just seems...
Hey, at least it made top two.
Exactly. Hey, silver is nothing to write home about.
Yeah, nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah. It's just a little too circular. And another thing that I think is kind of hindering it is that there's, like, they use like gold and white and black and red, and there's just a few too many, like, kind of colors going on in it. It just kind of doesn't look too well. But I think the biggest issue with it is just how big and circular it is. I don't know. It's a little out of place.
It feels kind of empty.
Right. Like it takes up a lot of space, but it doesn't have a lot of character.
Yeah, like the belts they're replacing were big circles, but there were like those helmets, the like Spartan looking helmets or whatever.
Right.
On the big circle. This is just like, I don't know. I don't like it.
Yeah. So, you know, I do think it is a little better than the existing one. Like, has a little bit more going for it, as opposed to just a, like, you know, the blue and the red ones were, they were identical except for the colors, I guess. So
yeah,
it's kind of has something going on to make it stand out. But The other belt.
Little fun fact for you.
Oh, yes. Lay it on me.
The Miz has held every iteration of the tag titles. Not every, but like the last, I think it's six designs of the belt, the Miz has held every one.
Hey, good for him.
The like blue ones that like what the new SmackDown belts like are paying homage to. Mm-hmm. He had that one. He had the old world tag titles. He had the red leather belts. He had the blue leather belts. He's got the new Raw title. And he had the ones that look like the big pennies I was talking about with you and John.
Oh, wow.
So he's held the last six different tag belt designs.
Good for him.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty nifty.
That is a fun little fact.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was that one. And then the other one is the WWE Tag Team Wrestling Championship. And this one is replacing the SmackDown one. And I'll probably never remember the names of the two titles. I'll probably never get that right for a few months. But this one I like a lot more just because it's a unique shape. It's sort of like an extended rectangle. It's kind of curved and kind of bent up a little in the bottom. And it's got like a little archway on the top that kind of juts out a little. So, you know, right off the bat, you know, it gets points for, you know, a unique shape. But then what's also nice is the kind of design on it. They just have gold. Obviously, they have like the gold metaling and they just stick to black like detail work. I think it looks a lot cleaner than the other one where, you know, it doesn't look kind of all over the place. This one, it kind of has a more like unified, like creative direction in a way.
Yeah, these belts look nice. I like these ones a lot.
And another thing that people are happy about is that it's not just a belt with a massive like WWE logo like plastered on it. Obviously, there's still a WWE logo on it, but it's significantly smaller than what we're used to seeing.
Not the focal point.
Right. So yeah, these ones are cool. And it is currently held by A Town Down Under. And yeah, it replaced the SmackDown one not too long ago. So very cool indeed. Those are just my thoughts, raw, unfiltered thoughts, straight from my twisted dome directly into your ears.
Mr. Intimidating Tim, exactly. Raw and unfiltered. That's how I like it. My milk. I don't drink milk. I'm lying.
It hurts my tummy.
I like almond milk. Give me that nut juice. Yummy.
Yeah, so that's, I'd say that's about it for my week in wrestling. Yes. The main thing was obviously watching TNA's Rebellion over at your place.
Yeah. Before we get to that, I just remembered there was breaking news a couple days ago.
Oh.
We don't have Josh here to do the Twitter thing for us. But,
that's right.
I saw on Twitter, or X, whatever it's called, WWE NXT Battleground is going to be presented live from the UFC Apex in Las Vegas.
Ooh.
So this is the first WWE show to come out of a UFC venue since the merger.
Since the big merger. Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe a sign for things to come. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I think the first battleground, or not the first, the last battleground is in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this one's at the UFC Apex in Las Vegas. It's in June, I wanna say. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was really cool. I think
very cool.
I don't know what it looks like, but in the video package, like to announce it, it looked like it was like maybe a cooler, like smaller, more intimate kind of setting for a show, or it could just be like a deceiving video and they'll show it on air and it's like the biggest friggin' thing you've ever seen. But
everything looks smaller on video.
Las Vegas. TNA Rebellion
was also in Vegas,
live from Las Vegas at the Palms Casino.
Yeah.
This, I thought, before we even talk about matches, I thought this was a really fun show. Not just because I was watching it with some of my favorite people. I thought it was a good card. I thought everything was really fun.
Yeah, you know, I'm definitely biased towards shows that I watch, either like watching with you over at your place, or you know, just anything other than me just watching it on my computer.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's, you know, I enjoyed it.
This was your first time watching TNA, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, first time watching like a full card, like a full pay-per-view, I'd say.
Okay.
Because I think you've shown me a few matches before. Like, we watched a Nick Nemeth match. You know, the main thing I remember is those neon yellow, bright-ass ring ropes. So it was interesting to see them go with a different color scheme. I think the ones this time were purple.
Yeah, they were purple. I thought they looked really cool.
It looked sick. And the venue was pretty interesting, too. I felt like the space between the edges of the ring and the barricade for like the crowd, there wasn't all that much space, so it kind of felt like everyone was really kind of, you know, tightly packed in there. TNA also does, you know, one of my favorite things, or at least they did for this event, where they have the stage that the, you know, wrestlers walk down. It is aligned like vertically with the edge of the ring, so you can just kind of walk on level to the ring.
I love that.
Which is fun to see that. It was a fun time.
I didn't get a chance to watch the Zero Hour because I was coming home from work and trying to race everyone to my house. Some people got there before I was even home, but my parents were here, so they let everyone in, I assume. But on the Zero Hour, there were three matches.
Yep,
one was
like three.
ABC and Leon Schlater taking on the Rascals, which I unfortunately did not get to watch, but I feel like that was just a high-flying masterpiece.
Yeah, because I love Leon Slater. I remember the first match that I saw him in, I think it was a GCW show. And
yeah,
like,
it was the Explosive Lucha.
Yeah, it's like, this guy is so fun to watch. So looking forward to all this cool stuff he does in TNA.
I know you, when you watched the Leon Slater match for the first time, remarked on that move he did where he cleared the ring post entirely.
Yes.
To dive onto a dude outside. I saw one of the guys from the Rascals, Myron Reed, did that in the match.
Nice. That's impressive.
Yeah.
I
think he would get a kick out of the Rascals. I think they're your, like, vibe.
My vibe? Hell yeah.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like you like a little, like, speedy, high-flying action as opposed to just, like, a big slugfest.
I do like a little speedy, high-flying action, indeed.
Which is why you love WWE speed.
Hell yeah.
Which, not for nothing, I've really been enjoying.
Yeah, it's nice. Nice and quick.
Yeah.
I feel like it's very easy to keep up with.
Yeah. And then also on the kickoff, countdown show, they call it the countdown. The countdown to Rebellion, there was a knockout tag team title match.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Luna and Jody Threat, Spitfire, I believe is their tag team name, versus Decay, Rosemary, and Havoc. Danny Luna and Jody Threat were just randomly accompanied to the ring by Lars Fredriksson from Rancid. They just like dropped that on Instagram, and I was like, oh, you have a celebrity guest, that's cool, why is he on the countdown? Like, but they retained. No
nice.
Title change there, which brings us to the final match of the countdown, which was Crazy Steve versus the Laredo Kid in a digital media championship match. And this was the only title change of the entire card. Laredo Kid defeated Crazy Steve to win the digital media championship.
Yeah.
So I would like to go back and watch that after we record, because I am a big fan of Crazy Steve and I love luchadors, which is what Laredo Kid is. So
hell
that
yeah.
should be a treat. But that brings us into the main card, and the match that I was surprised kicked off the pay-per-view. Mustafa Ali defending the X Division Championship against Jake Something.
Mm-hmm. Had a big big title defense here to kick things off.
Right off the bat. Mustafa Ali has been undefeated for the past 8 months in every company he's appeared in since being released by the WWE and his no-compete ended.
Yeah, it's been very impressive run.
He also like defeated Chris Sabin to win this belt. Chris Sabin is one of like the greatest X Division wrestlers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So to start your reign by defeating Chris Sabin, insane.
Yeah.
To be undefeated across any promotion for 8 months solid, insane.
Right.
I think this further proves WWE really fumbled the bag when it came to Mustafa Ali.
Yeah, because like he was very fun to watch. You know, he sold moves really well. He hit moves really well. He has a really good good moveset, I'd say. Yeah, it was. I liked his gimmick. It was fun to see.
He's kind of sort of like I'm like Republican politician kind of character.
Yeah, you're describing it like that.
Yeah, because like before we were recording, I was scrolling through Instagram. And they were starting to announce things for this week's episode of Impact, which I won't discuss a couple things from it because it spoils stuff that happened we haven't talked about yet. Mm-hmm. But they're doing a ballot box battle royal where Mustafa Ali is going to dig deep into the ballot box to try and find his next number one contender. I was like, that's great.
That's funny.
Another interesting statistic about Mustafa Ali's X Division title reign, he is only the second ever X Division champion to appear on the cover of Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Oh.
The first time an X Division champion was featured on the cover of the magazine was in 2006.
Wow.
Do you want to know who that champion was?
Who?
Samoa Joe.
Yo! Yep. We're just talking about that, man.
Samoa Joe and Mustafa Ali are the only two X Division champions to appear with the X Division belt on the cover of Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Now that is a tasty little fun fact, Niblet.
Yeah. And I thought Ali up against Jake something was really good, like David versus Goliath.
Yeah, because Jake's pretty big.
That's like what I like about the X Division too. Is the famous tagline is it's not about weight limits, it's about no limits. So anyone can compete for the X Division title. Back in the day when it first debuted, it was kind of like their spin on the cruiserweight division. The no limits thing was like taking dives over the rope and high fly and moonsaults and that kind of thing. But
right.
It eventually, they brought in bigger dudes because they were like, it's not a weight class. It's an extreme class.
Yeah.
Because like the Monster Abyss was X Division champion at one point. Samoa Joe was X Division champion. Kurt Angle was X Division champion.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's one of the cooler concepts. And there was a moment in this match where Jake something had Ali above his head, like in a, like a press, like he was pushing him up with his arms like he was weightlifting.
Yeah.
And he just dropped him, like, from his height. Oh, like, wow. I think you, Sam, and Brittany all, like, audibly gasped when he hit the mat because of the sound it made. Like, oh,
you
shit.
Got air.
Oh, fuck. And then, of course, shenanigans with Ali's Secret Service getting involved in the match.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think this was a really fun way to kick off the show, and I don't think it, like, the show really, like, maintained that excitement. Like, it never felt dull. I was engaged and enjoying this whole show.
Yeah, same here. Oh, especially with the match coming up next, getting one of our favorite theme song entrances.
Yes,
to hear that was a lot of fun.
Say his name and he appears. I believe
in Joe Hendry.
Oh my god. Joe Hendry is great. Rich
Dude
Swan,
has so much charisma.
Yeah. Rich Swann and AJ Francis entered first.
Mm-hmm.
I could care less about AJ Francis, but I think Rich Swann is great.
Yeah.
Joe Hendry's music hits and his video is of Rich Swann and AJ Francis like edited over Joe
of his music,
like,
video
real poorly.
Yeah, like,
oh,
rotoscoped
so
almost
funny.
Yeah,
and
it's
like,
great
the part where he plays the guitar Prince and Slam don't have guitars, but it's like sticking out of their shoulders because they just rotoscoped over Joe.
Yeah. It was great.
Man, I thought this match was it was good. I thought Hendry and Slam worked really well together.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And then was it Sean Merriman? Was that the football player?
Yes.
Him and then like some rappers at ringside got involved on behalf of Francis and Swan to help Swan win the match. Mm-hmm. But you thought that Sean Merriman was going to stop AJ and Swan from using the big platinum chain they got from the rapper. And then he ended up using it on Joe Hendry.
Yeah. So our boy Joe went down pretty roughly.
Yeah, and then he got hit with a frog splash or a 450. I don't remember, but it was a top rope move that was really cool looking.
Yeah.
That got
still a fun one.
Yeah, got Rich Swann the win, but
I still believe
in Joe Hendry. I always will. I
always
think AJ Francis getting paired with Rich Swann is like a really good move on TNA's part because I don't think AJ Francis is that good in the ring. I don't think he ever was. He's getting a little better, but having him partnered with Rich is like he'll do most of the work in the match, and then they can really have AJ come in and just highlight what he is actually good at.
Right.
So I think it's a really good pairing, and Rich Swann seems like a good fit to kind of, no pun intended, show him the ropes and maybe help him work a little better than he already does.
Yeah.
Would have liked to see Joe win, but I had fun with my friends, so
it was. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. What's the next match, Tim?
Next up was the Full Metal Mayhem match, which was basically just a weapons match.
It's like an Extreme Rules from WWE.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So we had Eric Young facing off against Frankie Kazarian in a Full Metal Mayhem. So you know they brought out some ladders. You know they brought out some tables. You know they brought out all sorts of, trash can lids and frying pans and just, metal things to bash each other with.
Hey, don't forget the cookie sheets.
Don't forget the cookie sheets. So lots of metal, lots of mayhem. I will say, I was enjoying this match probably until, the very end, because it looks like Eric Young took a pretty nasty tumble.
I have an update about that.
Oh, okay. Please share.
At the end of the match, it ends when Kazarian goes to hit the flux capacitor off of the top rope through a table. The flux capacitor is kind of like a Spanish fly. So it involves him flipping off the top rope, holding the opponent. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to go through a table, and it looks like they just caught the edge of it, and it breaks kind of weird. And the minute Eric Young hits the mat, he's just gushing blood from the back of his head.
Yeah. He's gushing blood. He's not moving at all either, which is never really a good sign.
His ear got partially cut off his head because of how the table hit him.
Oh, man.
That's why they kind of cut away, and you saw so many people moving around ringside. Right. They were, like, getting a stretcher and stuff to take him to the backstage doctor.
Oof.
And he was able to get it, like, reattached and everything. So he was just bleeding from, like, the initial cut.
Oh, man. It was scary to watch.
Yeah. That was the only, like, kind of, like, oh, shit. Well, like, there's like the typical wrestling, like, holy shit kind of moments. But this was like the only like, oh shit, that didn't go right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You never want to see anything like that because, obviously, the wrestlers are always at risk of something happening. Like there's always that danger factor and it's important for them to, ride the line between being safe and being entertaining. So it's always scary when, the reality kind of hits. But hoping for the best that, everything's good with Mr. Yeah. Young.
Wish him a speedy recovery if it requires recovery. And if not, just Eric, you're one of my favorites, so feel
There you go.
better. One of my dad's favorite moments, because I forgot to mention, Ralph was watching this with us.
Yeah, we love watching it with him too.
Yeah, Ralph's always a good sport. He may not know what's going on most of the time, but he has fun.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things is if you ever ask my dad what his favorite match is on a show, he just says whatever one is actively on.
The
There was a moment where Eric Young put a trash can over Frankie Kazarian's head, like a metal trash can, and then wrapped this big bike chain around his hand and punched the trash can. And dad was like, "Oh yeah, do it again. Quit punching the trash can." He was getting a kick out of it. He likes the crazy weapon matches, but he doesn't really like the GCW death match where they like stab a wooden stake into a guy's head and that kind of
Yeah,
stuff.
it could be a bit much.
Yeah, he's just like,
Yeah.
"Oh, cookie sheet. That's crazy.
Yeah,
They're not even
that's
baking."
fun.
Yeah.
So next up we have Mike Santana versus Steve Maclin.
This was a surprise match.
It was, because wasn't it? I'm trying to remember exactly how it started out. Like they thought it was gonna be someone else coming out, or what was kind of the story
So,
behind it?
So in the promotion for this show, not even like the promotion for this show, like the night before the show, TNA put this thing on Instagram and it was like, who's gonna return when the lights go out at Rebellion? And like this cryptic video was playing, and that was like the caption on the Instagram post. So people, I think, thought this was the lights out moment because it was just Macklin standing in the ring and he's talking, and then he pulls out this a piece of paper and it's a new TNA contract that he signed. And he's talking about how all his demands were met and what have you. And he said the only one that wasn't met yet was having a match at Rebellion. So cue the music for the director of authority, one Mr. Santino Marella. He comes out and he says, "Listen here, Steve Maclin, you son of a gun. I will give you a match right now here at Rebellion with somebody I have just signed also to a contract. Here he comes now. Who's it gonna be?" And music hits, and my cousin pointed this out. They cut away from where Santino is, trying to kind of keep the mystery of who this opponent is for the surprise match. The first lyric of the entrance music is the name Santana. It's Mike Santana from LAX of Santana and Ortiz. They are no longer a team, him and Ortiz. It's just Santana's on his own, Ortiz is on his own. They like real life had a falling out, so they're no longer tagging companies together. So out comes Mike Santana through the crowd. He beats Macklin in this match. So a lot of people were like, "Oh, this must be the lights out thing." Lights never went out. Lights don't go
Oh,
out.
that's
It was
right.
just an entrance through the crowd. So it's cool. Santana is back as a solo star. The last time he was there, he was a tag team guy. He had a like really good feud as the new LAX with the OG LAX, which is Homicide and Hernandez. That was really cool. That also ended in a Full Metal Mayhem, now that I think about it. But yeah, this was honestly, I don't remember much of the match. It was just cool to have a surprise match with a like return in it. So I will say this.
And
This was
it was like a full surprise match as well. It wasn't just like a
like
return.
a squash kind of thing. I will say this was the first return of three on this pay-per-view.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
So, Tim, my man with the match card, what came up
E.
next?
Next up, we had the TNA World Tag Team titles on the line. The defending champs, I forget their tag name, but it was Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards.
They are two-thirds of the system.
System, that's right. And they're going up against the one and only Speedball Mike Bailey and the one and only Trent Seven. I forget their
AKA
tag name.
Speedball Mountain.
Speedball Mountain, yeah. And Mike Bailey is someone we've seen a lot of matches from. Always fun. He was in the spring break, some of the matches there, I think. Maybe
Yes,
he was in the Battle Royale, I want to say.
he was in the Clusterfuck Forever, and then he was in
The DDT match, right?
Yes, he was at DDT Pro, but he was also at the regular Spring Break. He teamed up with Nick Wayne and Jordan Oliver to fight.
Oh, that's right.
The very rapidly showing their age, Rock and Roll Express and Ricky Morton's son, Kerry Morton. I think the Rock and Roll Express are like pushing 70.
But... yeah, they were born in like the 50s, I think.
Yeah, but they're fun. I like Kerry and Ricky, the father and son, because at last year's Crockett Cup, Ricky Morton, for the first time in his entire career, I think, this is what producer Rick told me, he turned heel and is now like the heel manager for his son's faction.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, yep, that was Speedball's match at the Collective. So, yeah, Speedball and Trent Seven unsuccessfully challenged for the TNA Tag Team Championships. I was talking to my friend Sam, not just out loud to myself, the other night, and he said this was his favorite match of the show. And I have to agree with him. I thought this was so fucking good.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And the system as well was kind of a reoccurring, you know, made reoccurring appearances throughout the entire night, just because they had a lot of people from their faction, like having matches and holding titles, because I think saying that they have a lot of gold right now.
Right. So the system is like the big heel faction that's kind of running TNA at the moment. Moose, the TNA heavyweight champion. He's in the system. Then it's Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards, the current tag team champions. The fourth member of the system is Alicia Edwards, Eddie's wife. She's actively campaigning to tag team with Masha Slamovich to bring the Knockouts tag titles to the system. And then since Moose used to play in the NFL, they sometimes just have football players with them. Like at the last big show, D'Angelo Williams was with them as like a member of the system.
That's funny.
But yeah, they're like the big heel group that's running the show.
Nice.
So I thought this tag match was really cool. I thought Speedball's kind of high flying faster style really played well with like the British strong style that Trent Seven utilizes. I'm gonna open up a second window to find out how to describe British strong style and just hope it doesn't cut out my headphones like it did last time.
Whatever you do, don't click leave the recording.
Yeah.
We're professionals, right?
Yeah.
That's how we roll.
Okay. So British strong style isn't the type of wrestling he utilizes. That was a group he was in that just happened to be all British wrestlers utilizing strong style wrestling.
Oh, okay.
British strong style was Trent Seven, Tyler Bate, and Pete Dunne. Mm-hmm. So the current New Catch Republic. Two-thirds of his faction. But strong style wrestling places a premium on delivering realistic strikes, impactful maneuvers, and intense submission holds.
Oh.
It's a big style like that's popular in Japan as well. Like Shinsuke Nakamura utilizes it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I thought like this kind of the tag teams where like both members utilize different styles. I can't get enough of. Like I thought their two very distinct move sets blended so well for like their team maneuvers. Mm-hmm. And then even like Eddie and Brian kind of wrestle the same, but the roster cut lariat into the Boston Knee Party as their finisher. I thought that was so cool.
It's good. I especially like how you were saying a lot of their moves are like Massachusetts, Boston, like themed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fun. I love a good gimmick like that.
There was, the subculture. It's, Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster. Mm-hmm. They're a British tag team. They have like fun pun names for their moves like that. Like one of them is called the Stun Dog Millionaire, and it's like a stunner off the ropes. And then they have one that's like the Blitz Knee Bop, and it's just like a big knee strike thing. It's
That's fun.
so creative.
I love that.
Everybody's so creative.
They're so funny.
Part of me was kind of hoping that Speedball Mountain would take the tag belts, but I think it's too soon into like the system's kind of running the show as the big heel faction to take belts off of
Yeah,
them.
you don't want to make them seem too weak.
Yeah, like they're just a bunch of a-holes, really. And it's like, I want to see these guys stick around for a while because, like, I like Brian Myers a lot. Eddie Edwards, I'm okay with, and Moose is really growing on me. Like when he first debuted, it was like, oh, just a big dude. But he's improved so much. Like he's gotten in great shape. I think he has like single digit body fat,
Whoa.
which is absolutely insane. But
That's very impressive.
we'll get to Moose in a little bit because I think we only have three matches left to talk about.
Yes. Yeah, so the next one was the last man standing match. So this was between Josh Alexander going up against Hammerstone in a last man standing. And I feel like the rules are pretty similar across promotions, but basically if you don't get to your feet by a 10 count, then you lose pretty much. And yeah, this is a fun one. I'd say this is probably up there for one of my favorites for the night, I gotta say, which is kind of surprising because I don't normally like last man standing matches or anything like that. But this one was fun, and I think a big part of it was for the majority of the second half of this match, Josh Alexander was just really getting beat down. Every time he would get up, he'd just get knocked back down even harder, it seemed. But the dude just was not giving up. He was just persevering through it all. And eventually he was able to hit a pretty nasty move on Hammerstone, on the like ramp leading up to the ring.
That was
And
cool.
Hammerstone was not able to get up in time, and Josh Alexander got the win. And I was like, damn, that was a nice little story told within that match.
I
It was
believe
good.
my mom was in the room for this one because we had just taken out dessert. She came out to try some because my wonderful girlfriend Brittany made a Reese's peanut butter cup trifle cake thing, and it was so good. And we were all sitting and eating it, and I saw the color leave my mom's face because Hammerstone produced a small black bag. And as wrestling fans, we know what's always in the small black bag.
Oh, do we? Tax,
Thumbtacks.
tax, 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 tax.
When I believe it's called the Nightmare Pendulum is the name of the move. Alexander Hammerstone was his name in MLW, so it's like Josh Alexander versus Alexander Hammerstone, you know? But now he's just Hammerstone. So Hammerstone hit the
Confusing
Nightmare,
to track.
right? He hit the Nightmare Pendulum off of the top rope into the thumbtacks. The way Josh Alexander landed, the thumbtacks were like in his butt, all the way up his back. And then if you looked, Josh Alexander is a bald man. There's one in the
Yes.
back of his head. And Josh Alexander always wears headgear, like collegiate headgear, when he wrestles. But Hammerstone is like a big trophy hunter, they were calling him, because he won the last match. So, like, Alexander won the first match. Hammerstone won the second. This was the rubber match. Hammerstone was had Alexander's headgear, and his biceps were so big, he was wearing it on his bicep, and it looked like it was like on a human head. Oh my God. But yeah, as Tim said, Josh Alexander won the match, therefore winning the rivalry.
Yes. Yes,
I thought
indeed.
this was probably a close second. I still think the tag title match was my match of the night.
Yeah, this one was enjoyable. It was also a very long one. It was almost 20 minutes long, according to the match card
Oh, wow.
result thing that I'm looking at. Yeah.
I don't think I even realized it was that long because I was having fun with it, you know?
So then after that, did you have any other thoughts on this one? Are you good to move on?
Oh, I did want to say on the go home episode of TNA, they gave Hammerstone like a match to get him ready, and he fought little Guido Nunziano from like old school ECW in the 2300 arena where ECW started, and it was like, oh
Give
my
him a little
God, I'm gonna
match
watch little Guido get broken in half.
to
Little Guido was a member of the FBI, the full-blooded Italians. And he came to the ring accompanied by the new FBI, which is himself, a second man, and then a guy, I think his name is Zach Clayton, but I did some Googling. The guy Zach Clayton, who's in the group, is married to JWoww from Jersey Shore.
No way.
Yep.
Oh, that's
He
funny.
is dating, he's somehow connected to JWoww. I think they're married, but yeah, he's in the new FBI. He was very briefly in AEW, but I don't think they ever did anything with him. Yeah, this match was really fun. I thought it was a good time and a really good way to end this feud.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. So then we have the second to last match, which is for the TNA Knockouts Championship, the Women's Championship. The champion, Jordynne Grace. We're all familiar with her. She was in the Royal Rumble, this year for
Little Mama
WWE.
Pump.
Yeah. And she was defending against Steph DeLander, another wrestler who we've seen a lot of. We saw her in person as well at
We did. GCW versus
the GCW
TJPW.
event. Yeah. So this is also a fun one. Jordynne Grace is extremely strong. Just
And also really
absolutely.
short, I learned.
Yeah. Steph looked like a very tall person next to her. Steph also did not have Matt Cardona there to, hype her up as he usually
Yeah, he
does.
had surgery because he got injured.
Yeah. So
Speedy
she was
recovery, Mr. Cardona.
indeed. So she was out there without him. Hey, maybe she would have won if he was there. We'll never know because
Yeah, she was with
she did
the
not.
good hands.
Yeah.
Jason Hotch and John Skyler.
This one had a lot of shenanigans near the end. Steph was using her boys to try to get a win. And there were a few surprise moments as well. They had a few blackout surprise returns. Is that correct? Did one of those happen for this match?
So one of them was a return, yes.
Okay, yes. I'll let
So
you cover that because I don't remember it fully.
yeah, so the referee got taken out due to shenanigans, as they do.
As one
And
does.
one of the good hands put on the referee shirt, and they're like, oh, that makes him an official referee, ha ha ha. And they went to count the pinfall. Right as about they were about to count three, the lights go out. Everybody's like, it's the moment, it's the lights out return.
Dun dun dun.
Lights come back on, it's PCO. PCO takes out the good hands, and then Steph DeLander tries to seduce him. So he does not respond well to the seduction because he is a monster. He is the perfect creation one. And that is what PCO stands for in storyline, but in actuality, it's his initials, Pierre Carl Ouellette. For those of you who know old school WWE, like my dad, he was one of the Quebecers and famously feuded with Bret the Hitman Hart.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, PCO's been around a while.
He's an oldie, but a
Yeah,
good but a goldie, as they say,
I think
right?
he's almost 60, but anyway, he goes to choke slam Steph DeLander, and then he just gets a big boot to the back of his head,
Yeah.
and in comes Khan, Big Khan, his rival. For those of you who are old school black and gold NXT fans, Big Khan is Connor from the Ascension, longest reigning NXT tag team champions. So that's who Big Khan is. And he starts beating down PCO and Jordynne Grace. And then the lights go out again.
Dun dun
And
dun.
everybody's like, oh my God, this is it. This is the moment. Lights come back up. There's someone leaning against the turnbuckle. Baseball hat, baseball bat as well, looks up.
Yeah.
And it is the death machine, Sami Callihan returning to TNA.
Big return.
He takes out Khan with the baseball bat, hitting people, fighting. Jordynne Grace gets the win, retains her Knockouts title. She celebrates in the ring with Sami Callihan and PCO. This still is not the who will return when the lights go out at Rebellion moment.
Right. There's still more to come.
Right. And you might be saying to yourself, when is that going to happen? Because there's only one match left.
That's right.
Tell you, it's after this match.
Whoa, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So the last one was for the
main
TNA
event for the evening.
Yes, the big one, as they call it. For the TNA World Heavyweight title, which we already said is currently held by Moose of the System. And he was defending it against the one and only Nick Nemeth.
The wanted man.
The wanted man, yes.
I thought this match was a lot better than I anticipated. Going into it,
I agree.
I thought Nemeth was really going to carry because I didn't think Moose was that good. But I thought Moose held his own and might have done a little better than Nemeth did.
Yeah, it was. It was. I think it was very well put together, especially, you know, considering that they still had to find a good way to include all the, you know, the big reveal at the end.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it.
I think, like I said, Moose has really grown as a wrestler. His style has really matured, and you can tell this guy's training and putting in the work. Because maybe like 4 years ago, not good. But now he is holding his own, and I think he's actually pretty deserving of this title run. He's a two-time heavyweight champion, and he's been doing good with this current run. I think him winning the match was the right call because
it's
only 3 months into his title reign, and like we said with the tag match, I think every member of the System retaining was the right move because you want to push them as the big heel faction that's running the show until you can get in like a face group that's like able to beat them. Not that like Nemeth, Speedball, and Seven weren't like trio to take them on. It just like they didn't feel like the ones to do it.
Right. So, and it's also good too because, you know, when you're trying to build like a big bad guy group like that has like all the titles and stuff, you know, you can't have them lose it right away, because if you keep on building them, you know, retaining and retaining, then it kind of builds anticipation for when they eventually do lose, and it makes it all the more rewarding when it does happen.
Yeah. I think what else I have to say about this show we need to talk about the reveal, the
yes.
return.
Let's dive into it.
Moose wins the match. He hits this nasty looking spear on Nemeth, gets the three count. He's in the ring, holding the title, celebrating. The rest of the System comes out and is at the top of the ramp because they got ejected from ringside.
Right.
Their like music stops, and the video from Instagram that had the caption "Who will return when the lights go out" starts playing on the screen, and then it like it plays through and the lights go out, and then you hear a laugh, a very well-known signature laugh. Lights come back up. In the ring, it is the return of the broken Matt Hardy.
Yo,
broken Matt hits the Twist of Fate on Moose, holds up the TNA title, and the stream ends.
Yeah.
I love the broken Matt Hardy character. I thought it was one of the most creative things that Matt Hardy has ever done. Such a cool idea. They tried to do it in WWE as the woken Matt Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he was teaming with Bray Wyatt. That's when they won the tag belts together.
Mm-hmm.
But Broken Matt, when it originated in TNA, one of the greatest things in that era of professional wrestling.
Yes.
It was so cool. Like, it got so big that he got his own, like, TNA pay-per-view called Total Nonstop Deletion. And all of the matches were held at the Hardy Compound, which is just his backyard. He's got, like, a ring set up. And one of the things that Broken Matt Hardy would do was the Lake of Reincarnation. So if there was, like, a wrestler who was in TNA, but they had another gimmick in, say, the WWE or something like that, he would throw him in the lake, and then they would come out as that character.
Gotcha.
So, like, one of the matches, like, Shane Helms was wrestling in it. Back in the day, he was a superhero character called the Hurricane. And his catchphrase was, "What's up with that?"
What's up with that?
So, Shane Helms is in one of the matches. He gets thrown in the lake. He comes out as the Hurricane. He says, "What's up with that?"
What's up with that?
And they throw him back in the lake, and he comes back out as his original WCW character, a boy band themed wrestler in a boy band themed faction called Three Count. And Three Count, what their thing was before their match, there would be these three dots in the ring, and each one would be standing on them, and they'd sing their song. It was like Pinfall for You or something. And the other two guys from Three Count just like appear coming out of the woods. And they sing the Three Count song together. It was really cool. Like, Broken Matt was awesome. They had so much leeway and creativity for it. For some reason, Broken Matt Hardy is British.
and he's just randomly British.
Matt Hardy is from Cameron, North Carolina. Like, just the way he speaks and the way the crowd gets into it. Like, it's so funny. Like, there was one bit he did where he was on this big riding lawnmower, and he was like, "Ah, I see you have encountered my mower of lawns."
Sounds like a freaking Weird Al character.
It looks like Weird Al, but his hair straightened.
It really does.
Looks like you, but anyway.
And I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, you could be Broken Intimidating Tim on the next episode.
Yo, that'll be my Halloween costume.
Oh my god, yeah, you would pull it off. Broken Matt being the big return, I thought was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling, like, their next show they're advertising, I believe, is Under Siege. But it's like one of their free specials. They do. It's not free, but like you have to be subscribed to TNA Plus or the YouTube channel. And then just like,
right.
You don't have to pay extra to watch it. You can just watch it live.
Right.
Like, it's on a Friday night. So I have a feeling PCO and Callahan also return with the lights off. Matt Hardy returned with the lights off. I think the three of them are going to be the next ones to go after the system.
That would be cool.
Like, I was saying that to you and my cousin, and my cousin was just like, "I think you just figured out the, like, whole next show." And I was like, that's what it feels like.
It makes sense from a, you know, like, thematic approach. You know, they all appeared when the lights went off.
So, yeah. And then if, like, Jordan Grace was with Callahan and PCO when the lights went on and off, technically.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if they needed someone to take out Alicia Edwards, they got Jordan Grace right there.
There you go.
Yeah. It's a little 4-on-4 action. But
everyone gets an opponent.
Overall, what was your favorite match from the whole card?
Ooh, favorite match. I'd probably either have to say the World Tag Team titles between the System and then Speedball Mountain. Either that one or the Last Man Standing match.
Okay. Mine was the tag team title match or the world title match. I'd say those two were my top two.
Nice.
But yeah, I think this was a good show. I had a great time watching it live with you and the boys and my darling
yeah.
Brittany.
It was really a lot fun. Of fun.
So with that, if you have any final thoughts.
I would just like to say that wrestling is a ton of fun when you watch it with people. So whenever you get that chance, freaking go for it, my guy.
I do want to say, give a shout out to Sam B, one of my best buddies. We were talking about the show afterwards, like texting back and forth, and he said, "Damn, why didn't I get into wrestling sooner?" And I said, "Buddy, you don't know what wormhole you just opened." So, Tim, I'm letting you know now, live on the podcast. I believe it's June 30th. Let me double check the date. But I plan on hosting AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling Forbidden Door.
Ooh, nice. Little Sunday night.
Invited. I believe it's a Sunday. Yeah. Oh, shit, it is a Sunday. Dang.
Hey, man, I'd be down.
All right. If you're able to, your lovely wife is invited as always.
Nice.
So, AEW and New Japan, the Forbidden Door, might be the next We Watched Together special.
Yeah. Keep your eyes peeled for it in the upcoming future.
Yeah. With that, thanks for joining us in Slamtown on this episode. We'll see you next time.